Welcome to the I'm Book Podcast. I'm April O'Leary. Today on episode 70, I'm excited to feature Kendra Petty. She's a woman who has succeeded in an all-male industry, becoming an executive vice president at two firms. She's a dynamic public speaker, a powerful negotiator, and a deal maker. She loves bouldering and scrambling in the mountains of California, Nevada, and Arizona, and she's been a boater for many years. And she loves fast cars and traveling. She was at our recent Booked Naples event, so it was great to have her here in Naples, Florida. And she is the debut author, most importantly, of her memoir, I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead. So let's hop into this really exciting interview. I know you're going to love her as much as we do. Let's get started. Wait, before we go into this episode, I want you to hop on over to O'LearyPublishing.com because we have a brand new website and a brand new author adventure for you. On the homepage, you can customize your author map. Each step of the way, you'll be guided with a short video instruction from me. It's totally free, and you can see what it would look like for you to get started writing your book today. And at the very end, you'll get a customized email with a special surprise, and I cannot tell you what it is. Plus, you will get a video thank you from me as well, and a chance to schedule a publishing consultation. So I look forward to chatting with you, to seeing how you map your author adventure at O'LearyPublishing.com. Go do it, I dare you. Welcome back to the I'm Book Podcast. I am April O'Leary, and I'm here today with one of our amazing authors, Kendra Petty, who wrote this book called I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead. And she is not dead. She is here alive today to talk to us about it. And her subtitle is Escaping Abuse, Occult, Attempted Murder, and Other Insanities, a story that cannot be true, but is. Welcome, Kendra.
Hey, April. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Of course. I'm so excited to talk to you today. And Kendra just was in Naples recently to speak at our Book to Naples event. And honestly, so many people came to me afterwards saying how amazed they were with your story and your talk, and what you did just blew them away. So how was that for you the first time getting on stage talking about your personal life? I know you've done a ton of speaking.
Right. Yeah, I have done a lot of speaking, but not about myself. So it was interesting. You know, the lead up to it and the preparation, I really tried to put a lot of time into it and prepare. And, you know, once I got up there, it really just flowed. Probably because I am used to speaking in public a lot, but there was a lot of trepidation about really talking about some very personal things in my life. It was the first time I had talked about some of those things to anyone. So it was tough, but it was very rewarding. I couldn't even get out of the room afterwards. A lot of people came up to me afterwards to talk about my story or talk about some things that they had been through and some of the things that they had done to heal. So it was really an incredible experience. I really appreciate the opportunity.
You were amazing, but to get to that point, you had to do a lot of work to get your book done. And, you know, when we got connected through Jessica Jones, who was your ghostwriter / editor, you had already gone through years of a process to get those stories out of your head and onto paper. So let's backtrack to that very, very first moment. And I know you had reached out to a number of different editors at the time, but even prior to that, where were you in your life where you were like, you know what? I think I need to put all of this insanity into a book.
Right.
How did you come to conclude that?
That's kind of exactly what I said, almost verbatim. Although I just said, I actually didn't say a book. I said, I need to put it down in writing. But for years, people had told me, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. I've shared stories. My life has been it's been just a cycle of trauma and tragedy, both in childhood, but also in adulthood, but also just bizarre, crazy events that would happen to me as well. And so I would tell stories and my friends would say, you got to write a book. I'd say, no, I don't have time. You know, who would read it? But I a couple of times I did sit down to try, probably about 6 years ago, to try to write some things. I just couldn't. I didn't have the time and I don't think had the capacity really to do that. It takes a special person to be able to write a whole book methodically. And about 5 years ago, I really hit a wall with all that cycle of trauma and tragedy and PTSD. And I said, enough. Like, I have got to figure out why my life continues to be on this trajectory. So I started reading and digging in and looking for ways to heal myself, heal my mind, my body, my soul, hoping that that would help change that path. And through that process of really figuring out how to heal myself, I decided I did need to write these things down and that it would help me in the healing process. And so I set out to hire a ghostwriter because I knew I couldn't do it myself, at least not for it to be published, if that was the path we were going to take. So I hired the ghostwriter, and I hired Jessica and said, I don't want to publish, but all this madness, I just need to get it in writing. I just need to get it down because so many unbelievable things have happened to me in my life. And as we moved along, and Jessica's a published author, she's got her own books, she's ghostwritten a number of books that have been published. She's worked with Simon & Schuster and Random House, so she really knows her stuff. And as we moved along through the 3.5 year process of working together, she really encouraged me to publish. And a couple of years into it, I finally said, okay, I'll consider it. And then as we wrapped the book up, I said, well, how do we get it published? And she really helped me put the package together and start submitting it to publishers. And she introduced me to you. And here we are.
And, you know, it's funny because, well, I love Jessica. You and I both do. And I'm so glad that she was confident enough in what we do to hand over your work, because to me, it's not something that we take lightly. I mean, to take somebody's life story, the traumas and successes they've had, and to be entrusted with that, to bring it out to market, is not like, you know, helping someone buy a pair of shoes. This is a really delicate matter. And I know that when you started with Jessica, you had in mind that it would be much shorter of a process than it actually was. Yeah. So how was that, you know, because I think that's not uncommon in a lot of things in life, right? Like, you know, it's like Grant Cardone wrote his book 10X. It's like, your goals aren't wrong. It's just, it's going to take 10 times longer, 10 times more money, 10 times more effort. Like, don't change the goal, just change your expectations. So I get that. But it is when you're digging into a lot of the stories that are painful and hard and trying to remember the details, like, how was that for you to really sustain that level of engagement and energy over 3 years?
It was tough. It was tough. You know, I'm very good at compartmentalizing. And so there were lots of evenings and weekends that we would, because I have I work full time. So there were lots of evenings and weekends that we would work on this, and that she would send me work to read and edit, or there were some stories that I just didn't want to talk about, so I wrote them myself. So there were plenty of Saturday afternoons where it was tough, where I'd have to just get up and walk away and take a break, and rereading and reading and editing and rereading and re-editing. It was a lot for 3.5 years, but it was also very cathartic, probably more so than I expected. And, you know, Jessica shared with me when we were finally done, she said, this is the hardest book I've ever had to write. She said it was the most emotional and the most difficult, but I have grown so much from it. And she's now a very good friend. I was just texting her this morning. And she no longer ghostwrites. So I think I ruined her. I think I broke her.
You broke her.
I did. Moved on. She now owns a multimedia company, and she's doing so many other things. So no more ghostwriting.
Yeah, she's an amazing creative talent for sure. And, you know, like you said, the process of committing to Saturday afternoons and getting up and walking away and taking a breath and knowing when the ghostwriter is best at doing their job versus when you really needed to step back and write some things yourself. How did you feel your way through some of that? Because that's, you know, when you're sharing things from the heart and things that are difficult, to delegate that to somebody else. And it's not that you're entirely doing it, because I know there's lots of interviews and conversations and things that happen throughout that process. But how did you determine that at some points, like, you needed to just do it?
There were a couple of stories that we had put off. She knew sort of the context of the stories. They're early on in my childhood. She knew the context, and I just said, I'm not ready to talk about them yet. And as the years went on, she kept saying, we've got to get these stories done in writing, because we've got to build them into the book. And I finally just sat down, and took me, you know, a month, month and a half, maybe a couple months, to just write them myself. And then I sent them to her and I said, here are the stories, so that we don't have to talk about it, so that I don't have to talk about it. If you want to edit it, feel free, or, you know, make it more, make it flow different or more readable. But there was definitely push and pull from Jessica and I. She's a creative person, so she's much more emotional. I'm a business person. And one of the coping mechanisms that I've developed over the years from childhood on to deal with a lot of this is to compartmentalize. And, you know, if something's very emotional, I have the ability to put it in a box and set it aside and say, I'll deal with you later. I've got to focus on work, or I've got to focus on my career, or whatever the case may be. And so she wanted more emotion and tried to pull that emotion out of me. And that was hard for me to, mm-hmm. to share. Mm-hmm. That made me much more vulnerable. So.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a time and place, of course, like you said, to compartmentalize and to put things to the side and say, you know, I can't just, you know, wear my heart out on the street every day, or I'll never get anything done. But then to sort of deliberately sort of take those boxes back and peek in there and say, well, what was in here that I put in here? Like, I can't remember. It's like the times when I've, you know, gone through, like, maybe from a move or, you know, decluttering the house or whatever. And I heard a strategy one time, like, put anything that you're not quite sure you want to give away yet in a box and put it in your attic or somewhere, and then go back 12 months later. And if you haven't needed anything, don't even open the box, just get rid of them. So I always thought that was kind of a good strategy. But emotionally speaking, you know, there can be times where we put stuff away and then it's decades later and we're like, I don't even know what was in that box, or I don't know if I want to open that box. So as she was kind of trying to pull you out, you know, of some of those, the emotions out, did you find that was hard to identify the feelings that you had compartmentalized?
100%. And it actually, that was really one of our, probably our biggest tug of war is, as we were probably 3/4 through the book, she's called me one day and said, you know, these stories are incredible. They're amazing. This is going to make an incredible book. But I really, you know, readers connect with emotions, and I really feel like there needs to be more emotions in this book. And so we're going to start an exercise where I'm going to set some appointments with you, and I'm going to call you, and I'm going to pick one of the stories, and we're going to talk about that story. And I want you to tell me how it feels, how you felt when you were going through it. So I said, okay, well, at first I said, you know, that doesn't sound very comfortable. Can't you just put in your emotions? You're the writer. And she said, that's not how this works. And I said, well, I'm not sure if I really can share, but I'm willing, you know. Oops. So we kind of went back and forth, and she was frustrated and I was frustrated. So we got off the phone, and I thought about it for a few days, and I called her back. And I said, all right, listen, I really want this to be a great book that readers do connect with. And if you feel like there needs to be more emotion in the book, then okay, let's give it a try. And so so we set an appointment, and we discovered that I really only had the vocabulary for a handful of emotions, happy, sad, angry, and hungry, even though I know hungry is not an emotion. But, you know, in looking back at that whole process, I realized that, you know, we didn't talk growing up. I grew up in a religious cult, basically. And there were not conversations about anything you felt, because we were not allowed to feel anything other than just, you know, focusing on God and the Bible and this religion that my mother and her my stepfather had created. And so there was no, we weren't allowed to be angry, we weren't allowed to be sad. We weren't even allowed to be like very happy, gregarious. We just had to be very non-emotional, but my mom was extremely emotional. So she was emotional enough for everybody. But we also did not talk about that. And that carried over into my adult life. So I realized I just didn't have that I feel very deeply. I feel very, very deeply. I just didn't have the capability to talk about how I feel very well, other than say it made me happy, sad, or angry, mm-hmm. or hungry.
So would you say that now, having gone through that process with Jessica and doing those exercises, that just in your daily life, you are more able to access emotions that maybe before you would have missed?
Yeah. And I've always felt those emotions. I just always mm-hmm. kept them very contained. Everybody mm-hmm. would always tell me you have such a good poker face. And so I think so. You know, I'm not a crier. I'm just very even. You know, I don't get really angry, but I also don't get overly excited. And I don't cry. I definitely feel those things, but I think I've become more empathetic to people when I see them, because I used to kind of shut down when I would see those emotions, you know, when mm-hmm. somebody would get overly, you know, angry, or, and I still can shut down if somebody's angry, but, you know, somebody's crying, I have a hard time really, or used to have a hard time really understanding that or dealing with that. But I think I've become more, more empathetic to the feelings of people, instead of just,
Do you think maybe this is, and then we'll get into the content of your book a little bit. I know I'm going a little bit down the psychology trail, but I just find it fascinating how people, you know, their life experiences up to the point when you meet them really do define a lot about a person, and how they went through life, like you said, in childhood, and what was and wasn't talked about, or what was and wasn't allowed, and how that made you into the person you are now, or how, you know, how all those pieces fit together. Like, we're very complex beings, and, you know, to have put all of that experience and trauma and insanity into your book, and then to be able to kind of go back and have those feelings around the things that maybe you didn't feel at the time. Did you find that you had more empathy for yourself?
Question. I definitely felt a lot during those times, for sure, during all those, but I also was in so much of my life in survivor mode and just trying to survive, that, you know, that was my sole focus, is, you know, I've got to live, I've got to survive, I've got to not die, I've got to, and that really kicks in an adrenaline level that you're just eye on the prize, really focused. But I, you know, I definitely also felt very emotional through all those things. I don't know if it created more empathy for myself or not. I don't know if I'm there quite yet. That's still a work in progress.
Okay. All right. I'll accept that as an answer.
that was kind of the answer I gave Jessica a few years ago when she was trying to pull all that emotion out of me.
Yeah. Well, I won't arm wrestle with you over that one, but I definitely think, you know, in reading through this book, which for those of you listening right now, again, it's called I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead by Kendra Petty. You know, it really makes you see the struggles that seem insurmountable, and watching you go through so many things, time, and like you said, time again, and how things kept coming, and it was I'm going to make this change, and then that won't happen again, and then you find yourself in another traumatic situation, and then, but yet, you know, looking at you right now today, you know, looking sharp and with a beautiful home and smart and successful career and, you know, great relationships. I mean, when Kendra's had her book launch, we do a big book launch over Zoom on the day of the book launch, just because it's a great way to connect with people from your past and friends and family who might not be able to be in the location. I mean, Kendra's room was maxed out. I mean, and the amount of people that stayed on after our sort of interview went on to say how much they loved her, how proud they were, how, you know, appreciative they were to be part of her life, it's like you would never know that the person who went through all of this could be here now, you know. So so what have you found, maybe from readers who have spoken to you about your book, maybe those who knew you before the book, maybe those who have only met you since the book, some of the stories? I mean, there's so many stories, so I don't want to pull out anyone in particular. I'm curious what you find is resonating with readers, where they say, oh my God, I couldn't believe this part of the story, or I didn't know that about you. Are there any peeks behind the curtain that we can give some of the listeners? I don't want to give away the whole story, sure, of course.
You know, because I spend a lifetime of not really talking about things, most people didn't know many of the stories that are in there, and were quite shocked. And honestly, the feedback has been phenomenal. It's just been so heartwarming and so positive. And I've had people reach out to me from my childhood to tell me, you know, I never knew, and I'm so sorry. And I tell them, don't be sorry. Like, we all have our paths and we all went through what we went through. I'm alive and I'm thriving. I have an amazing life. But I think as you get into my adulthood, those things are a little more shocking for people. My marriage and working for a mafia style company that tried to kill me. That really is sort of the pinnacle, I think, of the book. And that was, you know, spending over a decade trying to heal from that experience alone is what kind of catapulted me to say, enough is enough is enough. I've got to figure out a way to stop this trajectory so these things don't continue to happen in my life. But I would say probably that's the last few chapters of the book before I sort of round out in the book my path to healing in the last chapter. And I would say those last few chapters are pretty to people.
Yeah. Well, to whet the appetite of those who haven't read the book, when Kendra talks about what happened in her career and the insanity around I don't even know how to explain it. Like, I could see where you would be tongue-tied with Jessica, because it's almost like you can't even understand that this could actually happen in your professional life. It seems like we've talked about, this needs to be a Hollywood movie. It really does, because it's really like unbelievable. When you got to the point of healing, as you said, and that comes through towards the end of the book. And it's one of the things I love so much about the book, is it's not, you know, the book is from the very beginning, Kendra's connection with her brother, Kent Jr., which she talks about with such love and admiration. And I love that we included his picture in the front of the book, you know, and to witness what happened. And I don't necessarily want to give that away. We don't have to, you know, but Kendra had some very early tragedies that happened and continued. Then to get to the point of healing, and at the end, so you've gone through time after time after time and decade after decade of just really immense suffering and things that are, you know, couldn't have you know, any one of these things if it happened to one person. But to get to the point of healing and how you came about that, like, what were some of the points in your life that pointed towards that? If you can give a tiny peek into that, and we don't need to give the whole thing away either, but, you know, for me, that's the real power of the book, is not like, hey, all this shit happened to me and it was terrible. It's like, this stuff happened and this is absolutely like I read this and I'm like, my life has been like, you know, nothing in comparison. So I have no reason to not forgive people or to not live with gratitude or to not have some sort of, you know, health in my life, right? Because in comparison, you know, you've given me a path to say, like, no matter what you've been through, there is a way forward. Mm-hmm. But how did you come to that?
It took a lot of time. And I really looked at my life. I looked at the life I had built, which is an incredible life. But then behind the scenes, all this catastrophe constantly happening to me, but yet still maintaining my career and showing up every day and not sharing those things with people and just handling it. And it was, you know, it was not just a lot of, it wasn't just a lot of mental pain. It was a lot of physical pain too. The things that I went through were physically very painful for many, 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 many years. And so really learning how to deal with the physical and the mental pain so that I could show up every day and get focused on my career, which was so important to me, and build my career to make sure I could take care of myself, was really a process. But when I hit that wall 5 years ago and said, I want to live the rest of my life in peace, am I attracting all this trauma and tragedy? Is it something I'm doing? You know, what is happening? And I started spending time in Sedona, which is a very healing place. And there's a lot of energy workers, and started working on, you know, energy work, some meditation. And I did so many things. And I talk about some of them in the last chapter of the book. I don't talk about everything, but, you know, I just realized that I have escaped death so many times, more times than what's in this book, that there's got to be a reason why I'm still here. And it's not just for me to continue in my career and continue what I'm doing every day. There has to be a reason why I'm still alive. And I just decided I make sure I give time, I make sure I give money, I make sure I give back because I am so fortunate, but there's gotta be more. And so I decided maybe I can help people through my stories, which is sort of how the book started to come to fruition. But in that process, and you know, not just the book, but in focusing on so many other things to heal my mind, my body, my soul, my heart, you know, I really started focusing on gratitude, forgiveness, opening myself back up. So shut down for so many years after my employer tried to murder me. I really just shut everybody out. I'm scared all the time. I was constantly looking over my shoulder. Are they coming back for me? Really opening myself back up to that. And that's been very hard. You know, gratitude is easy. You know, I focus on gratitude every day. I'm so grateful for, you know, I'm lucky to be alive. But focusing on forgiveness and forgiving all those that hurt me, there have been a lot, and forgiving myself for things, and also really letting my guards down and letting people in. But in finality, sort of wrapping all of this up, something I practiced my whole life, and I think is so important for anyone, is to never get stuck in blame, never get stuck in anger, never get stuck in self-pity and woe is me. Like you just have to keep moving. And if you're in a bad situation, you have to change it. You have to make that change instead of sitting in self-pity and woe is me. And I think that's really how I've always sort of pulled through those situations, is to just move forward and figure out a way to get myself out of that situation, and not find blame or sit in self-pity.
That was a long-winded
answer. But,
it's beautiful. I mean, it's a really beautiful way to think about moving forward, because you're right. Like, to me, blame and anger it stops the flow of energy of the good coming. Yeah. And it makes you feel powerless. Like there's nothing I can do to make my life better. So I may as well just throw in the towel. I may just, you know, all this bad stuff happened and it was nothing I could control. And so that's why I am, you know, living this life that's subpar, for example. Right. But to take the reins back and say, no, wait a second, like it should happen that I didn't want to happen. It shouldn't have happened. It wasn't my fault that it happened, you know. So it's not accepting blame for the things that happened, but it's saying, like you said, I can choose to move forward. I can choose to make my life good. I can choose to set better boundaries or get myself out of situations that aren't working. Or even to me, for you to have that sort of moment of self-awareness to say, why does all this keep happening to me? Mm-hmm. Rather than, poor me, this is always happening to me.
Right.
Right. it's like the curiosity of like, why? And is there a reason? If there's any part that I'm contributing to this, I'm going to find out. And if there's anything that I don't know about, you know, how to cut people out of my life, for example, that are causing chaos. Sure. Or, I mean, there's skills. Those are certain life skills, I'd say, especially growing up. You know, I grew up in a quite not as intensive a religious environment as you, but there was a certain level of that. And it feels like, you know, well, if, you know, in our world, Jesus laid down his life for everybody, then why shouldn't you lay down your life for other people? Like, everybody's worthy of my, you know, like, I sacrifice myself for everybody. And I think that's a really toxic mindset to have. Like, I think to untangle some of that and say, wait a second, no, first of all, like, you know, that doesn't serve me. Maybe that's part of the problem, is some of the ways I was taught to think as a young child don't really work. Absolutely. Or it's inviting more craziness.
Yeah. So, well, and you're molded as a child to, you know, for me anyway, there was so much chaos and so much abuse growing up and so much trauma. Like, it was just 911 every day for 18 years. That put my bar of tolerance for ridiculousness very high for my adulthood. And so when I moved into adulthood, you know, if I found myself in a bad, dramatic, traumatic situation, my tolerance was much higher. And it took me longer to pull myself out of that for many years, decades, until, you know, till the last five or six years when I said, okay, now the light bulb went off and said, I don't have to keep living like this. I got to learn how to have a life of peace and happiness and joy and health, physical health.
Yeah. I love it. And I love that, you know, we got the chance to work together and that we've become friends. And, you know, I think there are no accidents. I do believe that there are people that you're bound to meet, and that, you know, the job that we have as human beings is to connect people with one another, who we, you know, if you've ever had that feeling, like, this person needs to meet that person. And, you know, I'm grateful that Jessica made that connection, because how would, you know, you're in, you know, the Southwest, you know, on Pacific time, Jessica's in the way North, East in New York, and I'm in the farthest South, you know, East in Florida. So it's like, how did this triangle get connected? You know?
Yeah.
I just think it's amazing. So what's your hope for the future, for the book, and for what it might do for others who read it, or what you hope it might do for you personally, professionally, any aspirations or things that you're...
You know, I think for other people, just a continuation of what's already been happening the last few months, of people reaching out to me, and I've had different types of messages. There's really kind of three different types of messages that people have reached out to me with. Like, wow, I can't believe all you went through. But I can relate to some of those things, and it's incredible to not feel alone. Also, people who said, I'm very grateful for all the nuggets of information you shared in your book of healing and some of the ways you healed. I have now put those into play, and it's really helping me. And then thirdly, some people who have, several people, probably four or five people, who have reached out to me and said, wow, your book is really the kick in the pants I needed. My life is not so bad. I need to get up and start being grateful for my life and really moving forward instead of being so stuck. So I love that, and it makes it all worth it. So I would love to have that continue and have that outreach. You know, I think for me personally, being able to connect with people either through podcasts, or I've done, you know, some speaking, and whether it's book signings or whatever the case may be, and you and I are working with marketing companies to really try to figure out that right path. But, you know, obviously getting the book out there to people who maybe it can help. I've had friends say, wow, there's so much more to your life that's not in that book. And I said, well, you know, my ghostwriter thought it was too long, and my publisher thought it was too long, and the editors thought it was too long. So we had to cut it off at some point. So you know, perhaps more books. There's definitely more stories to tell. I've had a whole career that's got lots of stories in it, but I've also had a lot of other personal growth that I could share. And then just a lot of other very bizarre, very crazy situations that have occurred to me that aren't in that book. So perhaps more books, but really just continuing to connect with people and hopefully helping people through what I've been through.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it really does come down to, and we were talking about this right before the recording, it's like one reader at a time, one book at a time, one podcast at a time, one stage presentation at a time. And it's like, you know, having that connection where people are, even after your first talk here in Naples, coming up to you afterwards and standing in line and waiting to talk to you. It's just like that, wait a second, like I know that the seed, the message in this book is so powerful, and it just takes time to get that out and to get people, awakened to the power that they have within to heal and to not stay stuck. And I love that you said that third category of person that has sent you an emails or messages. It was like that prodding they needed to basically get out of the pity party and get their life back on track. And I think to me, that's like the biggest gift you can give anyone, right? To help it's like an encouragement to say like, come on, like come alongside me, let's do this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it really comes down to self-awareness and just really realizing, you know, most people don't even realize that they are stuck in a negative place or a negative energy or a sort of a woe is me. They don't even realize it until you kind of take a step back and think, okay. And so those are my favorite when people reach out to me. I had a few friends also, but I've also had some, you know, people that I don't know reach out to me, which is amazing. You know, I love that. But I do want to say that working with O'Leary Publishing and working with you and your team has been incredible. You had three editors working on the book to get it to a place of publishing, and you were phenomenal in holding my hand through this first process for me, and so were all of your editors, and Heather's incredible. They're all incredible. So I want to thank you for all your help, and you continue to be a help. You know, this is a partnership, and so I really appreciate the friendship and the guidance.
I do too, and I love it. I love what I do. I love that I got to work with you. And, you know, even in the process of design, and, you know, Jessica, the editor, there's also Jessica, the book designer. And, you know, on the front cover, if you're listening to this on audio, not seeing this on video, there's a photo of her hand, and it's the only tattoo that Kendra has. So she says, but I believe
you. It's true. It's true.
And it says lucky. And so we were able to get a picture of her hand with her tattoo on the front cover, because that's really a meaningful, to me, it's like the meaningful connection, because then when I see you on stage and you hold your hand up and I see your book and it's like, oh my God, that's real. That's you, you know, that's not a stock image of a hand with a lucky tattoo. Right. That's actually Kendra's hand.
Really,
I know, it's really her. So, I mean, it's really cool to be able to put those creative pieces together and get all of those things that make you who you are and make the book represent who you are. Mm-hmm. So I know there's going to be more to come, and, you know, we may even do another podcast episode, because I know we didn't get too much into the content of the book, because I really want people to pick it up.
Yeah,
I really want you, if you're listening and you're like, I've gone through really hard times, or I went through a lot of childhood trauma, and, you know, I don't know what to do with that piece of my life, or, you know, work, you know, I got myself into some really nasty work situations or relationships that I thought would turn out well and didn't. And how do I heal beyond that? You know, this book is for you. It absolutely has every piece of the puzzle, like every, from childhood to relationships, to professional life, to healing, to health crises, you know, injuries. What other categories?
A lot of mind blowing stories. I hear it's a
lot of mind blowing stories.
I've heard again and again. I mean, I hear it, you know, at least every other day, somebody tells me I couldn't put the book down. I read it in 2 days. I read it in 3 days. I never read books. I read it in a day. And I love to hear that. I love to hear that. I even, when I was flying out to Naples, and I think when I turned the book over to you for publishing, I had said, I never want to read this book again, because it is just full of just so much trauma and tragedy and just insanity. But I picked it up on the plane and started reading it when I was flying out to Naples to see you and do my speaking engagement with you and the other authors. And I couldn't put it down. I hadn't read it in a while. And I was like, this is really
engaging. This is really good.
Right. Like, so I, you know, I've read.
Did I write that? Yeah. I love that.
Did I really go through that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, thank you for being on with me today on the podcast. This has been so fun. You are a joy. I really adore you. And I will again suggest that you all pick up a copy of I Can't Believe I'm Not Dead by Kendra Petty. You can get it anywhere that you normally purchase your books. I'm not going to tell you where you should, because I don't know, Amazon's logged on my phone. That's the problem. It's so simple to just, you know,
right,
like deliver. I mean, if you can get the hardcover, you can get the paperback, you can get the ebook, and you could have it like tomorrow in a day.
You can order it from my website also, KendraPettyOfficial.com, which you helped me.
Thank you for reminding me. KendraPettyOfficial.com. You can get a preview of the book, so you can get a small sample, or you can order it direct on Kendra's site. Are you still signing copies?
I am.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to mention it because I didn't know if you had any more left for signed copies. Yeah. So there's a few signed copies left if you would like to get a signed copy. It is so fun to get a signed author copy. I think there's nothing like it, especially to gift it to somebody. Is so cool, you know. So anyways, well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you, April. I'm so grateful for the time.
Thank you. Sure to check the show notes for all the links we mentioned in the podcast. Have a great day, everyone. And thank you, Kendra.
Thanks, April. Thank you, everyone.
What an amazing interview with Kendra Petty. I'm so grateful she spent that time with us today. And to find out more about Kendra, you can go to her website, KendraPettyOfficial.com. And to pick up a copy of her book, you can get that at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anywhere you buy your books online. Or you can get a signed copy on her website. Please hop over to her website now, and you can even download a free preview. For those of you who have friends, loved ones who have gone through really, really hard things in life, this is a great book to show that despite difficult, really insurmountable situations, you can still make a choice to move forward and thrive in your life. This is April O'Leary signing out from O'Leary Publishing. Be sure to check us out at O'LearyPublishing.com, where you can take our author adventure quiz and see if now is the right time for you to become an author and share your story with the world. Have a great day.